That's composer, trumpeter, and band leader Lee Morgan starting up his own composition, Mogi, nicknamed after himself, as it turns out, by dear friends who would call him that. This is from his 1960 album, Here's Lee Morgan. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and we're going to do a very interesting exercise today. And you know I like these kinds of exercises where we listen with all we've got to find the story, and then we discuss the story once we have unearthed all the hidden meanings of a clip that we listen to. And the clip that we're going to listen to today is the our chief executive explaining, because now he is in possession of the facts of what went on in Charlottesville, Virginia. He was not going to be able to do that any sooner, he said, because he didn't have the facts. And that's why a lot of time passed, an inordinate amount of time passed, that people thought was reasonable. It was reasonable that he should have spoken up about this incredible development in Charlottesville, Virginia. But he didn't have the facts. So he finally got the facts and was able to ascertain quite correctly in his mind what had happened. And having discovered the truth of these facts, having learned all that he could learn up to now about these facts, he decided to report the facts and his findings of those facts to the nation. Here is Donald Trump speaking at a news conference at his Trump Tower building yesterday, and this is what he had to say. We'll come back after we hear this explanation and disassemble it. But here's Donald Trump.
Why did you wait so long?
I didn't wait long. I wanted to make sure, unlike most politicians, that what I said was correct, not make a quick statement. The statement I made on Saturday, the first statement, was a fine statement. But you don't make statements that direct unless you know the fact. It takes a little while to get the facts. You still don't know the facts. And it's a very, very important process to me. And it's a very important statement. So I don't want to go quickly and just make a statement for the sake of making a political statement. I want to know the facts. If you go back to my, in fact, I brought it.
What did you bring, Mr. President?
As I said on, remember this, Saturday, we condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America. And then I went on from there. Now, here's the thing. As to, excuse me. Take it nice and easy. Here's the thing. When I make a statement, I like to be correct. I want the facts. This event just happened. In fact, a lot of the event didn't even happen yet as we were speaking. This event just happened. Before I make a statement, I need the facts. So I don't want to rush into a statement. So making the statement when I made it was excellent. In fact, the young woman who I hear is a fantastic young woman, and it was on NBC, her mother wrote me and said through, I guess, Twitter, social media, the nicest things, and I very much appreciated that. I hear she was a fine, really actually an incredible young woman. But her mother on Twitter thanked me for what I said. And honestly, if the press were not fake and if it was honest, the press would have said what I said was very nice. But unlike you and unlike the media, before I make a statement, I like to know the facts. They don't. How about a couple of
Mr. Trump, was that terrorism, that event?
Say it, what?
CEO
CEO of Walmart said you missed a critical opportunity to help bring the country together. Did you?
Not at all. I think the country, look, you take a look. I've created over 1 million jobs since I'm president. The country is booming. The stock market is setting records. We have the highest employment numbers we've ever had in the history of our country. We're doing record business. We have the highest levels of enthusiasm. So the head of Walmart, who I know, who's a very nice guy, was making a political statement. I mean, I do it the same way. And you know why? Because I want to make sure when I make a statement that the statement is correct. And there was no way. There was no way of making a correct statement that early. I had to see the facts, unlike a lot of reporters. Unlike a lot of reporters, Nazis were there. I didn't know David Duke was there. I wanted to see the facts. And the facts, as they started coming out, were very well stated. In fact, everybody said his statement was beautiful. If he would have made it sooner, that would have been good. I couldn't have made it sooner because I didn't know all of the facts. Frankly, people still don't know all of the facts. It was very important, excuse me. It was very important to me to get the facts out and correctly. Because if I would have made a fast statement, and the first statement was made without knowing much other than what we were seeing. The second statement was made after with knowledge, with great knowledge. There's still things, excuse me, there's still things that people don't know. I want to make a statement with knowledge. I wanted to know the facts. Okay.
Two questions. Was this terrorism? And can you tell us how you're feeling about your chief strategist?
Well, I think the driver of the car is a disgrace to himself, his family, and this country. And that is, you can call it terrorism. You can call it murder. You can call it whatever you want. I would just call it as the fastest one to come up with a good verdict. That's what I'd call it. Because there is a question. Is it murder? Is it terrorism? And then you get into legal semantics. The driver of the car is a murderer. And what he did was a horrible, horrible, inexcusable thing.
Can you tell us how you're feeling about your chief strategist, Mr. Bannon? Can you talk about that?
I would echo Maggie's question. Steve Bannon is...
I never spoke to Mr. Bannon about it.
Tell us broadly what you're... Do you still have confidence?
Well, we'll see. And look. I like Mr. Bannon. He's a friend of mine. But Mr. Bannon came on very late. You know that. I went through 17 senators, governors, and I won all the primaries. Mr. Bannon came on very much later than that. And I like him. He's a good man. He is not a racist. I can tell you that. He's a good person. He actually gets a very unfair press in that regard. He's a good person, and I think the press treats him, frankly, very unfairly.
And your national security advisor, H.R. McMaster, against the Hamas attacks.
I did it the last time.
And he called on it again, linking the
Senator McCain
to the alt-right. And
Senator McCain, you mean the one who voted against Obamacare?
And he said...
You mean Senator McCain who voted against us getting good health care?
Senator McCain said that the alt-right is behind these attacks, and he linked that same group to those who perpetrated the attack in Charlottesville.
Well, I don't know. I can't tell you. I'm sure Senator McCain must know what he's talking about. But when you say the alt-right, define alt-right to me. You define it. Go ahead. Define it for me. Come on, let's go.
McCain defined them as the same group.
Okay, what about the alt-left that came charging at him? Excuse me. What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right? Do they have any semblance of guilt? Let me ask you this. What about the fact they came charging, that they came charging with clubs in their hands, swinging clubs? Do they have any problem? I think they do. As far as I'm concerned, that was a horrible, horrible day. Wait a minute. I'm not finished. I'm not finished, fake news. That was a horrible day. I will tell you something. I watched those very closely, much more closely than you people watched it. And you have you had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now. You had a group on the other side that came charging in without a permit, and they were very, very violent.
So
Do you think that what you call the alt-left is the same as neo-Nazis?
All of those people, excuse me, I've condemned neo-Nazis. I've condemned many different groups, but not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me. Not all of those people were white supremacists by any stretch. Those people were also there because they wanted to protest the taking down of a statue, Robert E. Lee. So, excuse me, and you take a look at some of the groups and you see, and you know it if you were honest reporters, which in many cases you're not, but many of those people were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. So, this week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week, and is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop? But they were there to protest, excuse me. You take a look the night before. They were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. Infrastructure question. Go ahead.
Should statues of Robert E. Lee stay up?
I would say that's up to a local town, community, or the federal government, depending on where it is located.
Are you against the Confederacy?
How concerned are you about race relations in America? And do you think things have gotten worse or better since you took office?
I think they've gotten better or the same. Look, they've been frayed for a long time. And you can ask President Obama about that because he'd make speeches about it. But I believe that the fact that I've brought in, it will be soon, millions of jobs. You see where companies are moving back into our country. I think that's going to have a tremendous positive impact on race relations. We have companies coming back into our country. We have two car companies that just announced. We have Foxconn in Wisconsin just announced. We have many companies, I say, pouring back into the country. I think that's going to have a huge positive impact on race relations. You know why? It's jobs. What people want now, they want jobs. They want great jobs with good pay. And when they have that, you watch how race relations will be. And I'll tell you, we're spending a lot of money on the inner cities. We're fixing the inner cities. We're doing far more than anybody's done with respect to the inner cities. It's a priority for me, and it's very important.
Are you putting what you're calling the alt-left and white supremacists on the same moral plane?
I'm not putting anybody on a moral plane. What I'm saying is this. You had a group on one side and you had a group on the other, and they came at each other with clubs, and it was vicious, and it was horrible, and it was a horrible thing to watch. But there is another side. There was a group on this side, you can call them the left, you've just called them the left, that came violently attacking the other group. So you can say what you want, but that's the way it is.
I think there's blame on both sides.
I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either.
And
if you reported it accurately, you would say. And you had some very bad people in that group. But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. You had people in that group, excuse me, I saw the same pictures as you did. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very, very important statue, and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. George Washington was a slave owner. Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? You like him? Okay, good. Are we going to take down the statue? Because he was a major slave owner. Now, are we going to take down his statue? So you know what? It's fine. You're changing history. You're changing culture. And you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly. Now, in the other group also, you had some fine people, but you also had troublemakers, and you see them come with the black outfits and with the helmets and with the baseball bats. You had a lot of bad people in the other group too.
Who was treated unfairly, sir? I'm sorry, I just didn't understand what you were saying. You were saying the press has treated white nationalists unfairly.
No.
I just didn't understand what you were saying.
No. There were people in that rally, and I looked the night before. If you look, they were people protesting very quietly the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. I'm sure in that group there were some bad ones. The following day, it looked like they had some rough, bad people, neo-Nazis, white nationalists, whatever you want to call them. But you had a lot of people in that group that were there to innocently protest and very legally protest because, you know, I don't know if you know, they had a permit. The other group didn't have a permit. So I only tell you this. There are two sides to a story. I thought what took place was a horrible moment for our country, a horrible moment. But there are two sides to the country. Does anybody have a final? Does anybody have? You have an infrastructure.
What makes you think you can get an infrastructure bill? You didn't get health care.
Well, you know, I'll tell you. We came very close with health care. Unfortunately, John McCain decided to vote against it at the last minute. You'll have to ask John McCain why he did that. But we came very close to health care. We will end up getting health care, but we'll get the infrastructure. And actually, infrastructure is something that I think we'll have bipartisan support on. I actually think Democrats will go along with the infrastructure.
Mr. President, have you spoken to the family of the victim of the car attack?
No, I'll be reaching out.
When will you be reaching out?
I thought that the statement put out, the mother's statement, I thought was a beautiful statement. I was telling you, it was something that I really appreciated. I thought it was terrific, and really under the kind of stress that she's under and the heartache that she's under, I thought putting out that statement to me was really something I won't forget. Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Do you plan to go to Charlottesville?
So there is a whole raft of statements of fact as delivered by our chief executive about what happened in this confrontation in Charlottesville where he failed. Well, I'm not going to say what he failed to say. That is for you to say. You listened. These were the statements of fact that he was able to ascertain on his own, and he did not want to preempt himself. He wanted to have the information, have the facts, before he rendered any opinion. So we can interpret the fact that he did render an opinion. We can interpret that to mean that he did have, in his estimation, the facts. Well, what do you think? What would you say is the most grievous offense committed here in listening to his version of the facts? 888-874-4888. We'll take this short break and come back to your ascertainment about the president's statement of facts. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We're talking about the president's presentation yesterday of his statement of facts, because he's a guy, he doesn't like just talking, you know, out of the top of his head. He likes facts. And until he has the facts, he will not definitively say anything. He would not render an opinion without the facts. So now that you've heard the president present the facts, what are you thinking? 888-874-4888. There were such glaring errors and omissions here that, I mean, you could lose count in just that 16-minute segment that I've shared with you. But it says a great deal, a great deal. What did it mean to you? What struck you as being most significant about this statement? We could start with the question, was this a statement? Or something else? What was this that he had the world waiting on? Because we did experience what I would say, I would categorize this as a tragedy by any measure. But it took him quite a while to recognize that it was a tragedy. David from Brooklyn, what are you thinking about what the president has said and why he waited so long so that he could get the facts? Do you think he did that?
Well, what struck me the most when I started listening, and I know how wonderful you have been in talking about media literacy, and I couldn't believe that this is the man who says he waited for the facts, and he has a history that includes what he did with the Central Park jogger case when the facts came out after these young people had been in prison for many years. The facts showed that they had nothing to do with that. He didn't wait for the facts before he was asking for the death penalty for them. And of recent times, since he's been in the White House, did he wait for the facts before he decided that President Assad of Syria had gassed some people and he sent maybe 100 missiles into Syria on the basis of getting back at President Assad? When the facts came out, the facts showed that President Assad had nothing to do with it. So I don't think he has any proclivity to finding out the facts. I mean, it's just ridiculous for him to keep saying over and over again that he waits for the facts before he makes any statement.
Well, that's a very keen observation. And there's something else about waiting for the facts. And that gives him yet another, some more room to wiggle. Because his purpose in this speech, what would you say his purpose in the speech was? In this press?
Yes. Well, his purpose was to respond to the events that occurred during that tragedy of this people being killed and hurt, to not enrage his base. In other words, he had to make a critical comment, but he did it in such a way as to allow some wiggle room by blaming the other side, as he puts it, the demonstrators who were responding to the Nazis and white supremacist group that was resenting the removal of those Confederate statues. Now, the point is, to me, all these types of statues honoring people who were traitors to the United States of America, all of them should come down. I don't want to see a statue of someone who was a traitor to the country I belong to. So as far as I'm concerned, they all should come down. The point here in this case is that he did not. I also have to mention that among those people who he is claiming were on the other side, more than likely, those people were provocateurs that are planted in there to create a bad a bad effect on legitimate demonstrators who are demonstrating against the Nazis. So you have to read this thing carefully. This is a very dangerous person who is willing to do all kinds of gymnastics to not insult his base and keep them, let them get know by not just the dog whistle, but by nice rhetoric that he's still on their side.
Well, you did a fabulous job, and you raised a number of points, all of which are extremely important to keep in mind. Thank you for calling in. Bill from New Jersey, you're on the air. What was very significant about this news conference that President Trump gave yesterday?
Well, I didn't hear all of it, but I heard most of it, and I don't really put a lot of stock in any statements that any president makes, because they're all liars, they're all self-serving, and it's always them campaigning. It's always them. It's him trying to say, okay, those that like me, I'm still with you, and those that don't like me, I'm not so bad. You know, you can like me too. So it really, it doesn't really matter any this way or that way what he has to say. Just like it didn't matter either way what Obama had to say about more tragic things than this. I mean, is this a tragedy? Sure it is. But is it a tragedy on the level of hundreds of thousands of children being poisoned by lead in their water? I don't think so. And Obama made almost no statement about that other than we're going to donate $1 million to the cleanup, when he could have said, not under my watch are we going to poison children in this country. I'm going to have my my administration find out who's responsible, and heads will roll, and people will go to jail, and we'll fix this. But he made a wishy-washy statement that meant nothing. And the only time I've ever seen him make any strong statement about the various tragedies that took place under his watch was when the white children were killed in Connecticut. He went on TV and cried over that. But black kids, black people being killed, he made almost no statement. If you remember Trayvon Martin, he said, oh, he looks like he could have been my son. That's it.
But we're talking about Obama. Statement. I want you to talk about Trump and what he just said, what we just heard.
Well, he's campaigning. He's campaigning. He's saying, I'm a good guy, you know, to those that like me, and I'm a good guy to those that don't. I mean, he doesn't care about what happened there. I mean, I don't know what happened there. You know, the only way to know what happened there is to be there.
What was a good clue that Trump really didn't pay attention to the facts, as he claims? Had he paid attention to the facts, and had he wanted to truly inform the public, what would he have done? It's a basic thing, but what would he first have done?
I don't think that there's any impetus to inform the public whatsoever. He's a politician now, and his statement is completely self-serving. He's not there to inform the public. His statement, its sole purpose is make me look good. Make me, Donald Trump, look good. That's all he's there for. He's
exactly,
not there to inform
us. He gave himself away by doing something, in fact, by failing to do something right up front. What was that?
Well, the waiting, this whole thing of I waited for the facts and waiting, that strikes me as no different than when police officers are given 48 hours to make a statement so that they can concoct the statement. That's what they do in those 48 hours is you know, sit, get together with their PR people and concoct a statement that may have no truth in it whatsoever, but that's what they do. And he gave himself the policeman's, you know, the policeman's time to concoct his statement.
Of course, they needed
statement.
To coordinate the story being told.
Yeah.
But the first thing that was missing, he never, ever said the woman's name. He never said, my condolences to the family of Heather Heyer, who passed away yesterday. I mean, today she is being buried, as a matter of fact. But he never recognized the family except to praise the mother.
Sure. Well, if you're if you're making a self-serving statement that's all about Donald Trump, you don't want to say anyone's name other than yours.
Well, if you're talking to the
Donald
mother,
you're acknowledging
the daughter,
name.
Aren't you?
What's that?
If you're talking about the mother, aren't you obliged to say to the public that we share in her grief or some reference and attach the name Heather Heyer to her tragic death and
well,
to identify
most people would do
the cause of that death?
Most people would do that, but if you're Donald Trump, there's only one name that matters, and that name is Trump. That's the only name that matters in the Donald Trump world. That's why he plasters it on things all around the world. He loves his name. And no other name matters to him.
What else?
I don't even know if he knows her name.
You did a great job. Thank you for calling in and contributing. Let's talk to Henry from Chicago. Give us a clue, Henry, that you picked up that was so glaring, and yet everybody missed it.
Okay. Well, first of all, greetings to you, Eutrice, and to the PRN listeners.
Thank you. Same to you.
I think what really got me, it was not exactly, I mean, there's a lot of things that he said that got me, but what really stood out to me was the atmosphere and the tone of this conversation between him and the media. It's like I've never seen this before with presidents interacting with the press. It was, you know, like you gave him the nickname President Chaos. That's exactly what I thought about when I was listening to it. It was just a chaotic type of thing. I don't know how many times he said, excuse me, people talking over people. People not even giving, you know, full answers or not allowing people to give full answers. And it was just, you know, virtually chaotic. And, you know, it's so interesting how, you know, Trump and the media have become enemies. And, you know, as much as, you know, we had talked about this like about 2-3 years ago, Donald Trump is the creation of the media.
Yeah.
And so it was just so interesting to me how they become enemies now because the media created Donald Trump.
But you see, he assumed that the relationship was that they were and still are his servants. And that's not what they don't agree with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that was so glaring here as the head of state, okay, the chief executive of the United States, he never once described who he talked to ascertain these facts, who told him what, so that he felt sufficiently confident that the information given him was, in fact, facts. He never said. And there was no chain of command discussed. He's not a detective. And he didn't bring any detectives or any investigative person up there to corroborate anything he had to say. You just had to accept it. And he's throwing it at you. And in the middle of it all, he tries, this is what I surmise, got the press quite aggressive, was that it was clear he wasn't really interested in discussing that. He talked about the jobs rate is up and all the good things that are happening and the companies that are moving back and the economy yeah. is going really well. And he was careful to identify those people who could authenticate his claims on all of these counts. He could not and did not identify Heather Heyer. I mean, if you're even rudimentarily smart, you would do that as a politician.
Mm-hmm.
So it showed also that one thing showed that he didn't respect her, and he wasn't going to respect her because she belonged to the wrong group, and they hate him. And therefore, he would do his best not to be crude about it, but in fact, he was crude about it by not mentioning her by name. Little things like that tell you where a person is at.
Exactly.
But we knew about him a while ago, didn't we?
Yes. Yes, we did.
So when he did that, he is, of course, a very thick-headed person. He didn't realize that he added another layer of disdain to himself because it was the right thing to do. It was the smart thing to do, but it was the right thing to do. If you really mean it, that these events that unfolded in Charlottesville were actually troubling to him and to the rest of the nation. He made no appeal to people just at this point. Set aside your political differences and get it together. This is a country. But he did this one thing, and that was really bad. Very, very bad. Very tacky. Very sexist. And very bad.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Thanks for agreeing. You hardly have said anything.
Well, I mean, you know, I just enjoy, you know, what you say. But I also want to add one more thing in regards to David from Brooklyn brought up a very good point about him talking about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. And while this is true that they were slave owners, the context that he put it in regards to comparing them to traitors to the country, is, you know, I always say this, you know, it's not exactly, you know, because anybody can tell the truth, but it's what you represent is because sometimes your intentions can be a lie, even though you're telling us what is true. So for him to basically kind of confuse us with this truth about, you know, well, we should take down George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. And I'm like, you know, and like I said, even though I agree with what he said, you know, it was an intention for him to do that, to compare guys like George Washington to Confederate generals, you know, traitors.
Which is the other point I'd like to make, just piggybacking on that. That was not the purpose of the press and news conference. It was not a comparison test.
Mm-hmm.
The president should have stuck to a very simple thing. This is a terrible tragedy, and we absolutely must try our best to understand what happened here. I didn't feel comfortable because the situation was evolving so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I had to talk, but you are the chief executive, which means there should be somebody who could give us a picture of what happened. Who did what? How did they respond? We got no information from law enforcement about how they tried to contain this thing that ended also in the deaths of two law enforcement officers who were assigned to observe this entire event from the air in a helicopter.
Exactly. And he didn't even mention their name.
He didn't mention them at all. So what was the chain of command? What did he, does he feel confident that the proper preparations were made? Did anybody contact him? Did anybody working in the White House coordinate any of this? This didn't just happen. This, you know, you heard mention of a permit in one case was applied for and gotten, and in the other case, no permits were applied for a public event. So all of these questions remain unanswered, and those are the first questions that should have been addressed. You know, exactly. He is at the top of the law enforcement chain in a way. So one would expect that he would say or mention, although people did their very best, the situation developed so fast. We still are trying to understand how this event unfolded. He hasn't mentioned any of that. Thanks so much for calling in and contributing today. Ani from Philly, you're on the air. Ani, are you there? Okay, we'll move on. All right. Michael from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice, and
hello
to the PRN audience.
Thank you.
I think you covered some of the things I was going to say, but I really, you know, and David from Brooklyn was right. He doesn't wait for the facts at all. He didn't wait with the birth certificate for Obama. He doesn't wait for anything. He's calculating on political grounds only, and basically, what should have been done, as you said, they should have put a yellow tape around that whole place. It was a crime scene. They should have done a forensic examination. He should have called for it. Were there civil rights trampled on in this situation? Were there constitutional issues in this situation? There should have been a yellow tape placed all around that whole thing, and three people died, right?
Yes.
And there was no focus on that, as you just said. Rather, it was just a political calculation, and he only focused on his political facts. And as he saw them, what was to his benefit politically, it had nothing to do with it. And, of course, he didn't address anything about the solution to the divisions, the racial divisions in this country, and what might be and how to address that. He says it's an economic issue, you know, a political issue, an economic issue, and that will solve the problem, you know. So
yes, and he said it to emphasize we should not feel unduly touched by this tragedy, because one side, I don't know how he came to the conclusion there are just two sides to worry about. And in no case is either side worth worrying about, because they're neither Republican nor Democrat. These are the commie pinkos that they used to talk about in the old days. These are the radicals. These are the un-Americans. So they got what they got, because they created their own circumstances. They created their own tragedies. And we should have no undue sympathy for this.
And we're never going to get the facts, I think, you know. I mean, just his actions, you know, prevent the facts from coming out. He didn't call for an investigation, did he?
No.
He didn't put down a yellow tape around the whole area and say it's a crime scene. Let's get the forensics. Let's see if there were provocateurs. No. We're never going to get all those facts. We're going to just get a political reaction, basically, and that's it.
And that reaction is only to show the strength of Trump. And
yeah,
he couldn't have looked any
polls.
Weaker.
Yeah, he's going to watch the polls and see how it plays, you know.
Well, already the polls are indicating record disaffection with Trump by the public, and he will not bounce back from this soon. The two advisory boards that he formed to help create this vigorous economy are now basically disbanded. They refuse to continue in any association with Trump. They've just quit today.
I think that, you know, he's not, you know, if he's trying to make a political calculation, he's not very smart. And I think he's gone right off the rails here because, I don't know the facts you're giving me, but I'm learning them, that he's gone off the rails politically.
He went off the rails mentally. He went off the rails politically. He's just off the rails. And it is not easy, not even for the very experienced people who are aligned with him. It is not easy to bring him back. And the discussion is now, can he be revived and resuscitated? Can he overcome this? And what would it take? Frankly, I am hoping that he is cast deep in the bucket of history and put a nice heavy lid on it and forget that this person named Donald Trump ever was president of the United States. He's brought nothing but chaos in our lives.
But in your opinion, Utrice, do we have to bear with another 3.5 years of this?
That's the question. It's a very good question. That's why people are heavily considering impeachment.
Yeah, because politically he's gone so far off the rails. I don't think it's just a matter of political correctness that he's just like gone way over the edge of the building as far as political correctness. It's human decency that we're talking about. It's a complete ignorance of facts that he's looking for. It's right in front of him, and he's completely ignorant of it. And his political calculations are completely off the rails. And like you say, this may be an indication of his mental capacity, his mental state.
Where he believes that he knows how to handle everything. He knows more than anybody on the planet.
Yeah, so this is a
he
real
knows
problem.
How to handle everything. And
this
look
is
what
a,
we got.
This is a real problem because, you know, intelligence is not functioning there. So in this case, I'm interested. I mean, I'm a bystander, you know, a spectator looking at what the heck is going to happen here. And
there will soon be a lot of legal questions that have to be answered. Is what happened connected to the way the police were told or instructed to function or not to function?
Yes, there has to be a forensic.
People were hurt. What happens to them? Who pays their bills?
But here's another question, Utrice. Without the yellow tape, without him stepping forward and without the DOJ stepping forward or the FBI, which is all under his auspices, let's say, we're not going to get that forensics. We're not going to know what really happened here. And we're going to get this, you know, this funny, fuzzy political calculation on Trump's part, which is in itself off the rails. I mean, I think some lawyers, yeah, like you say, I think some legal institutions are going to have to step in.
Well, we'll see how it goes. But the most important thing is to continue to, you know, make it unfold, the story. The real story will eventually unfold, despite the effort of Donald Trump to appear to be interested in discovering what happened there, but really is trying to manage the entire process so as to be on top of it, because he knows that this could and should sink him.
I'll ask you one more question.
He becomes more personally involved.
May I ask you one more question? I'm sorry to take up so much time.
No problem.
But in your estimation, do we have the talent journalistically in terms of investigative journalism to do the job, really, to dig up the facts?
Of course.
To present them to the American people.
Of course. Of course. You have all kinds of talent out there that could do a very good job and will. By the way, I'm absolutely certain of it, because there are too many funny things about this particular story, and Donald Trump's own reaction is suspicious.
Yes.
He has to explain why you wouldn't even say Heather Heyer. What's so hard about that name to pronounce? Why is it so difficult to even give her a modicum of respect in her death?
Yes, it's all very interesting.
Why do you have these kinds of trouble? There's something afoot, and it will be unearthed. It will be shown. Somebody knows what's going on at every level of this.
I'll be happy to read about it and just find out who uncovers this and digs everything up, puts that yellow tape around forensically and finds out what it's all about, what's going on here.
And it is already changing the United States. We have Baltimore just last night in the dead of night taking up every single Confederate statue and putting it someplace where they can't be seen.
Yes, well.
So we have an immediate reaction, and
right.
It will get more and more boisterous and vigorous.
Yes.
And Donald Trump will be hard-pressed to wiggle out of what's coming, because it's going to come from all different angles, and he won't easily be able to wiggle out of that. Thanks for calling in today. We have Buzz from New Mexico on the air. Okay, we lost Buzz. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
I don't believe it. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, this is Buzz.
Okay. Hello, Buzz.
Yeah, I have a different view of this. I think you're putting too much emphasis on Trump. Racism's been around for a long time, and it's going to continue. When Trump is gone, when people forget about what happened the other day, the racism is still going to be here. And I watch CNN and some of the other local stations peripherally, and I can't believe some of the malarkey that they're spilling out. This is not about Trump. It's about racism and maniacs in this country who find that somebody's skin color isn't acceptable. And that's the problem, Latrice. It's not Trump. The situation existed before Trump, with Obama, with Clinton, with Bush, with Reagan, and all the way back till I was a kid. And I don't know what happened before then. That's only history. But I've experienced it. And I don't particularly think that the nation, or these, and you included, are going in the right direction here. Well, something has to be done about the racism. I think that if you expect Trump to do something about it, or any president to do something about it, your expectations are misguided. And I'm not picking on you, Latrice. You're a wonderful...
I get where you're coming from. But I'll say this. It is also crazy to believe that it is about racism. It's not about racism. Racism began here before a good many people were even here. And before they even came here, there was racism. The issue that we really have to address is so deeply enshrined in every aspect of our culture. So there's hardly anything that we can talk about without seeing that dimension of it, and consequently the duty of any and all people in the United States to do whatever they can to dismantle it. Because this too involves profits, it involves money, it involves social status, who will have it and who will not. It involves creating a just society. When you say racism, it's entirely too soft a word. We're talking very often, when we say the word racism, we're talking about the murdering the possibilities of life for a person and the entire system.
That's a fallout. The symptom, that's a symptom. The fact of the matter is that it's racism, bigotry against somebody that's different than yourself. And you don't recognize people, I'm not saying you, but people don't recognize others as human beings, and that's what we are. We're not black, we're not white, we're not green, or whatever. We're human beings, and people can't get that. Anybody that's different than somebody, some sub item, and that's the problem.
But it's not a simple answer, because it's a complex issue, and it is a scientifically applied method of fracturing a society and going even lower to fracturing the people who make up that society. It's a very complex thing. But we have a tendency to simplify. Well, you know, Trump says, well, this is racism, or this group over here, they were these kinds of people, and that group over there were these kinds of people. I would like to ask, what group did his father belong to? His father, the Nazi sympathizer, what group did he belong to? These are the questions that we end up getting led to, because there's an answer there, and there ought to be an answer there, because it pertains directly to what we are witnessing now. When you could, you know, get up in your own house and see the neatly pressed white Klan uniform hanging in your father's closet, and you think that does not in any way shape your attitudes? Of course it does. And you can't say, well, now he's a president. He went to college. He has some sense. And he can lead a country. No. You're sick. You have been infected. You're the second generation, perhaps even the third, infected with this disease. You are a diseased person running a country. Now, when we start looking at things the way we ought to look at things, we can get into vigorous and healthy discussion. So Trump, in part, had to distance himself, and that's why he took charge of this thing himself. He could not allow this aspect of the discussion to surface, because he will have to deal with it directly. But if he carefully put a spin on it, and there's 6 degrees of separation between him and a Klan past, then, you know, he feels safe. Thank you all for calling in and contributing. Of course, we have some more discussion to go on this. It's very, very important that we look at these things in an analytical way. We get to the truth of it that way. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Charles Ortlieb. I hope I said that. I know I'd mispronounced it the first time. His program, it's new and it's exciting, I think. Truth to Power. So we'll see each other tomorrow and continue the conversation. Thanks so much for contributing today. Bye-bye.